But to start off today, just a quick look at the ACT budget, or the ACT draft budget that was handed, well, given out by our glorious Chief Minister Kate Carnell on Monday, and the complete load of rubbish that it was, as we all expected now. The headline that appeared on the Canberra Times, I was almost wondered if they'd actually bothered to write anything, whether they just sort of got the government's press release and just sort of quoted directly from that, because it had this fantastic headline, "It's a good news budget." And I suppose that's true if you are a filthy rich bastard who doesn't do any work or you own industry. But if you're sort of average bloke on the street who gets sick once in a while and has to go to hospital, or has kids who are going to school, or, I don't know, likes to play a bit of sport on the weekend and can't find a bloody oval where the grass isn't 10 metres high or something, it's not that much different. One of the things the Canberra Times thought they might trumpet on the front page was a payroll tax. They called it cut, we'll call it a handout, because that's exactly what it is. And if it was an increase in welfare spending, you could imagine it was shocking, handout to bludgers. But when it's a payroll tax, it's a great benefit to business. And essentially what they've done is they've raised the threshold at which you have to, businesses have to start paying payroll tax. And the motivation for this was, obviously, it's going to help small business. Now, what they did is they raised the payroll threshold from $800,000 to $1 million. Now, most small businesses don't have payrolls anywhere near $800,000 to start with. So raising it to $1 million is not really going to make a difference here nor there as far as they're concerned, because they're not paying payroll tax to start with. So who can this possibly be for the benefit of? Well, it's an extra $200,000 that companies don't get taxed 6.83% on, I think is the going rate for payroll tax. And the companies that are paying that are going to be sort of the bigger companies like Woolworths, Coles, Jules, I suppose some of the larger construction companies, if any construction companies actually employ people rather than just contract it out these days. So they're the sort of businesses who are already raking in millions and millions of dollars, who are just basically going to get another handout. It's not a great deal of money, admittedly, but it is money that is lost to the ACT government that they could spend on useful things, and my God, a hell of a lot of useful things they could spend that money on. They also are quite a great amount of extra health spending. Now, for this would be something that would normally be welcome, because if you listen to people actually have the misfortune of working in hospitals at the moment, the nurses, the doctors, the orderlies, the cleaners, the cooks, and all the other people that go into making a successful hospital, they're all bloody complaining that there's no money in the hospital system. And the reason that there's no money in the hospital system is not because doctors, nurses, cleaners, orderlies, cooks and whoever else are grossly overpaid, far from it in the majority of those cases. It's because successive governments in the ACT, whether they were of the liberal or the very liberal persuasion, have taken large amounts of money out of the hospital budget. And so we have this wonderful extra spending, but this extra spending is going broadly into new programs, which are to be welcomed, certainly, but that doesn't address the fundamental problem. There is no money going to hospitals in the ACT, where it's, well, hospital these days, I suppose. I suppose you count Calvary as well. It does get public money, and despite the fact that it's allegedly a public hospital, it doesn't matter what ward you're in, public or private, you still get a bloody crucifix above your head. That's my personal prejudice, which is completely irrelevant to this discussion. So really their talk about extra health spending is a complete load of bollocks. And the final point that they seemed to crow about, amongst several points they were crowing about, was that they were engaging in responsible government by running a surplus. Now, admittedly, a surplus of $2 million in a budget of several billion dollars is nothing. But really, it's absolutely criminal to be running a surplus when there is things that money needs to be spent on. Now, that doesn't mean the government necessarily has to run into deficit, but, why have that money in surplus? Why not put that money into something useful? It's just going to sit in the bank, and it's going to, or wherever the governments keep their money, probably under the beds of ministers or something. It's just going to sit there. It's going to maybe earn a bit of piddly interest, and then sooner or later it's going to be swallowed up into some big black hole when they stuff something up. And I think if there is things that money needs to be spent on, why keep that money in surplus? I mean, if you have $1,000 in the bank and you've got a mortgage payment of $1,000, you don't just sit there and go, oh gee, I'm gonna keep that $1,000 in the bank, and the bank comes and takes your house away. I mean, no one would think of doing that. So why do we do it here when there is things that money needs to be spent on? It's a stupid waste of money basically to have that sitting there. Well, BHP industrial disputes. Speaking of money sitting around and doing nothing, BHP are a rather profitable company, and have decided that they want to give some of their workers a pay rise. Now, this is something that, again, is to be welcomed. Nothing wrong with companies giving workers a pay rise. But there's a slight catch. If you want to get this pay rise, you have to basically sign a wonderful individual contract, you know. Renege on your mates in the union and whoever else who have basically got you to the starting point where that contract comes from. You know, the rights and conditions that are embedded in those contracts as well as your pay rise have come from union struggle. But, you know, don't worry about that. Sign your name on this paper and, we'll give you a pay rise. Now, I never feel sorry for the scabs, but I sort of feel sorry for these people in one way because they have this naive idea that they're actually going to keep this pay rise. But I think what they will find will happen is when BHP have got everyone out of the union and on individual contracts, they're going to come along when these contracts are up for renewal and say, oh, you're going to take a pay cut.
Hard times. Global economy.
And if you don't want to take that pay cut, well, there's plenty of unemployed miners out there, as BHP know very well, because they bloody put a hell of a lot of work. And so, quite disgusted at this, the Australian Workers' Union, of all unions, you know, the least one that we ever expected to actually do something for their members in Western Australia at our Port Hedland, in particular, have basically gone on strike saying this is completely unacceptable. And predictably, BHP has tried to get scabs across. Predictably, the police have helped BHP in that effort, although it was very pleasing to see on the news a couple of nights ago, basically, a bus full of scabs being chased through the streets. Not only was it unsuccessful in getting across, the members of the picket line decided to go after it just to make sure the people on there, knew exactly how they felt. And of course, the police have been, as usual, fulfilling their role as strike breakers. And the government has come out and in full support of BHP. In fact, John Anderson, our glorious Prime Minister at the moment, in Jackboot Johnny's absence, has basically said, oh, well, you know, individual contracts are the way to go. If workers want pay rises, then, you know, the way forward for workers' pay rises and the prosperity of the nation is for workers to basically give away all their benefits, all their rights, all their wages, and let the company have open slather. Now, on the Sunday past, the Canberra Times ran an editorial of such hysteria, maybe it was Monday, I can't remember, such hysteria, I was almost wondering if the Printed and Kindred Industries Union was about to go on strike as well. Such was the vitriolic anti-union tone of this editorial. And one of the things that came out of it was that, people on individual contracts deserve, you know, that well, actually, a number of things that I want to actually have a go at. So if Crispin Hull wrote it, Crispin Hull, you're a wanker. If Jack Waterford wrote it, Jack Waterford, you're a wanker. I suspect it was Crispin Hull. It's more in his style. A number of points he raised in this editorial. The first one was workers on individual contracts deserve their pay rises because they're getting rid of, restrictive work practices that are hand-in-hand with the union, having unions present in a workplace. Now, I've always searched long and hard at what these restrictive work practices are. Now, I can tell you, in my job, there are billions of restrictive work practices, and none of them come from the bloody union. Almost exclusively they come from management with these stupid little rules and regulations on everything. If you're doing this, you've got to follow this procedure and do this and this and this and this and this, and no one pays any bloody attention to it. And if we actually did, the whole bloody place would come to a grinding halt in about 3 seconds flat. And we'd probably have to quadruple the workforce to get the bloody work done. What they mean when they talk about restrictive work practices is not stupid management regulations. What they talk about is things, on a mine site in particular, the requirement that the mine be safe. Now, mining, by its nature, is, if you're going into underground tunnels, which have basically just been drilled into rock and blasted into rock, that is, by its nature, going to be a quite dangerous occupation. And it is probably, unfortunately, inevitable that there will be accidents in that sort of situation. But there is a lot that can be done, to minimise the chance of those accidents happening, and when they do, to minimise the overall impact of those accidents on workers. Now, if you're having underground tunnels, then the first thing you want to make sure is they're structurally sound. But to actually have engineers go under there and make sure this is the case, that's a restrictive work practice, because, it restricts people going underneath there. To have people going down there checking air quality, because you're underground breathing in, methane, radon, and all sorts of other nasty bloody stuff. Radon in particular is not the sort of thing you want to be breathing in large amounts. Restrictive work practice. not wanting to work 24-hour shifts when you're using bloody heavy machinery. Oh, restrictive work practice. I don't think anyone should ever be expected to use, you know, machinery where if you make a stuff up while using that machinery, you could potentially result in your own death and all the death of others around you. You know, it is absolutely criminal to ask people who are tired to work on that machinery.
I remember during the Maritime Union strike, one of the restrictive work practices was not having to work out in the rain while there was thunderstorms going on in those large cranes they have there unloading the boxes off the ships.
Those large metal cranes and those large metal shipping containers and all the other large metal objects. And it's true. Now, I think I always say in this situation, well, you got to manage the situation, well, why don't you go out and do it? You know, and of course, oh, well, no, we're managers, you know, we don't do things like that. Well, what do you do? Oh, well, I'll get back to you on that one.
Get you a memo.
Get you a memo. No, it's the receptionist who write the memos that assign them. And so restrictive work practices are by and large a load of crap, and any restrictive work practices there are basically there for two reasons. One, to ensure the safety of workers as they go out to work, and two, just make sure, you know, workers have, you know, some sort of bloody life outside of work. So, you know, they're not working 15 hours a day. They're working 50 hours a day. I think there'd be a large number of scientists quite interested in that, but, you know, so that they do have, you know, time off to do things they want to do. Now, the second thing basically related to companies not being able to afford to pay their workers. Because of these restrictive work practices, they can't afford to give pay rises because there's not enough productivity increases or that and things of the like. BHP posted a first quarter profit in this financial year of $400 bloody million. Now,
actually, if we're talking about company profit here, you'll all remember the big merger, I think it was just a week or so ago, of Time Warner and AOL, and as part of the reporting on CNN website, which is part of the Time Warner organization, they were showing how great the two companies were, and they had nice little statistics on what each company made, and they were talking about how AOL made a nice big profit, and then they underneath they said, oh, and it's a big company because it has this many employees. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. I'll go grab the calculator and I'll go and work out how much exactly each employee is making in profit for this company. And lo and behold, every single employee of AOL was bringing into the company $100,000 Australian.
And how much of the workers of AOL actually paid?
Well,
even if it's more than $100,000, it's still, you know, $100,000 they are earning and not getting, or not having any say over where it goes, whether it's that goes to them or gets reinvested into the company.
Well, this is the thing. It's pure profit.
Yeah, that's the thing. Company profits don't get. That's the whole point. If you look at company balance sheets, by and large, they sort of have allocations for, you know, for things that they're going to put in. They have money set aside they're going to put into plant or office space or whatever. And so the company profit is just pure profit. Now, where the largest number of that? And when we're talking about profit, it doesn't count what, you know, executive salaries and all that sort of thing, which can be, you know, ridiculously high, you know, millions of dollars a year, and which again is money straight out of the workers' pocket, salaries. And so I think if BHP or any other company is going to say, oh, we can't afford to give you a pay rise, put your bloody books on the table, you know. So not just what goes in the annual report or anything like that, the full bloody account, so you can see what every person and organisation gets paid, where money is going, you know, that's not going to salaries or maintenance or anything like that. And the question has to be asked, well, if that money is not going into useful investment, if it's not being returned to the workers, what the hell's being done with it?
Yeah. One of my favourite pastimes is you go down the paper recycling plants, and every once in a while you find that some rich bugger is throwing away his yearly prospectus for the for whatever company's invested in. You just got to flick through the back of these books, look at the, you know, profit made. These companies are making millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars of profit. They're not poor.
And so, yeah, the money is there to pay wage rises. If they're not going to pay wage rises, what they should do is say to existing workers, right, you're not going to work 40-hour weeks anymore, you're going to work 30-hour weeks with no loss of pay, and we're just going to use this other money and put other people on so you don't have to work as much. That'd be a great idea, and I'm sure there wouldn't be any workers who would complain about having to work half the time for the same pay. I mean, I think that would get unanimous support. So it's a complete lie to say that these companies don't have the money to pay these workers more money, or even the amount of money they get at the moment, and they have to get rid of restrictive work practices to do it. It's a load of rubbish.
The thing is, it comes down to control. You know, they want the stockholders, who are invariably very rich people, they want to have control of where the money goes. Whereas, you know, anarchists and a lot of other socialists say that, you know, you don't get the value of your full work, and if you did get the value, you know, you'd get to sort of decide where it goes. Just going back to the AOL, you know, 10 people could get together from AOL. If they could use the full profit of what they earned, you know, you put $1 million forward to doing a lot of good things.
And also in his Canberra Times editorial, because one of the things we have seen in strikes a lot of the time is people on the picket line stopping scabs getting across. Now, in the news reports, they've been called contract workers or BHP employees willing to work, but we'll call them what they are, which is scabs. I don't think... Is there a single human life form lower than a scab? I mean, I suppose pedophiles and the like, maybe. I think... I would rate scabs even lower than capitalists, because at least capitalists are honest. They say we're filthy rich bastards and we're going to screw everything out of you. You know, but of course... Now, several union picketers were arrested up in Port Hedland on Tuesday or Wednesday. I can't remember the exact date. I think it was Wednesday morning. Basically, for following to fail a lawful direction and resisting arrest. I thought, why don't we put assault police in there as well and go for the whole, you know, the whole shebang or something.
Oh, offensive language.
Yeah. And of course, what this failing to obey lawful order was, they wouldn't let scabs through when the cops wanted to help scabs. Go across the line. Now, this is supposed to show, if the cop ever tells you that they're there to help you, they're there for your benefit, tell them to get stuck, because it's, you know, every time there's an industrial dispute like this, we can see what the role of police in this society actually is. It was their historical role, it's what they were formed for to start with, because it was proving far too expensive to bring the army out of the barracks, which usually happened to be around docks or something. Every time there was an industrial dispute back in England and other places, that's what, you know, the historical role of the modern police force is, that's what it was formed to do. Now, what, according to the Canberra Times editorial and many other commentators, is that these picketers stopping these scabs getting across, oh, they're denying these people freedom of choice. Now, as we have said time and time again on this show, to refuse to join the union is not to exercise freedom of choice, but it is to renege on your responsibility to help earn the benefits you get at work. Every single benefit you get at work has been earned by people in unions fighting for that. Now, even if you're on an individual contract now, the starting point for that individual contract is almost always the award, or the current enterprise agreement. Now, where are the awards and enterprise agreements? Who's won the conditions in there? It's been the unions. It hasn't been the employers, you know, saying, oh, gee, we better give people a pay rise, or we better give them more holiday leave, or more sick leave, or something like that. That's things that unions have had to, you know, screw out of these people, you know, taking them, dragging and kicking to the Industrial Relations Commission or whatever to get these, you know, awards or enterprise agreements ratified with these conditions in them. So to say, oh, it's my right not to join a union, I'm sorry, that's a load of bollocks, because you are reneging on the responsibility of earning, you know, your rights and conditions. And you can only have democracy and freedom of choice when people are also prepared to take on responsibility. And this is one area where they should be taking on responsibility. So, in this regard, I mean, I seriously hope that BHP employees in New South Wales go on strike, as they have threatened to do in support, and of these people in Port Hedland and Queensland and everywhere else, they're having disputes, and basically hope that BHP gets taken to the wall on this one.
I don't know, am I imagining it, or hasn't there already been some secondary
strikes?
Yeah,
I think in Brisbane, I think in Queensland. Some people went on strike up in Queensland. But I think that was also to do with individual contracts as well. That's another interesting thing, pointing out that people can go about freedom of choice, but a lot of employees at BHP have been told, unless you sign an individual contract, goodbye. So I think we do hope the BHP workers win this one. We do hope the AWU, you know, show some leadership for once. Or maybe its members have just basically dragged the leaders kicking and screaming and actually taking some industrial action. And we wish them the very best in their efforts. We're going to take a break for some music now, a song very intimately involved in what we're just discussing. This is Toe to Toe. This track is called Union Joe.